From a channeled message that Pam Padalano received to the ears of thousands of human beings all over the world, a message of love and hope for the future of the human race. On Awakened Soul Stories on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, Fridays at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m., we'll speak with awakened humans from all walks of life, living their true life purpose and sharing their experiences to help others gain the same knowledge. Her guests are inspiring and insightful with true life experiences that will bring you the peace and guidance your soul desires. Listen in on Fridays at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. as we give you the tips and tools to help live your best life and be of the highest vibration in this world and the next. Pam has helped hundreds of people navigate successfully on their path to understanding the one true consciousness.
This is Pam Padalano, your host of Awakened Soul Stories. I just wanted to let you know that today's show is about addiction and disease. It's not usually one of my typical topics. However, the human aspect of this I felt was very important given what's happening in today's society and these wonderful people that step forward and help with this disorder. So I hope you will listen, and thank you, thank you, thank you. Good evening, and welcome to another episode of Awakened Soul Stories. I hope everybody had a great week. You know, we talked a little bit last week about how crazy it's been. I don't know if something's in the universe or the stars aren't aligned correctly, but this week seems to be a little bit better. Things are falling into place, and really excited about our guest today. So as you all know, I live in Griswold, Connecticut, and the two ladies that are with me tonight also are from Griswold, Connecticut. So we have Miranda Mahoney, and she runs and works for an organization called Griswold Pride. And we also have Kelly Barrett with us, who represents Matt's Mission. So I won't waste a lot of time talking about silly stuff tonight because we have important things to get to, and they both have a lot to say. At least every time I talk to Miranda, there's a lot to say. So we're just going to start with them. And if you have any questions, I don't have access to our chat tonight, but your comments in the comment section on Facebook Live, because we're running it that way as well. And if there's any significant questions for Miranda or Kelly, put them in there, and then I can send them the messages and they can answer the questions if they'd like. So, without further ado, first we're going to start with Miranda.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, of course, I'm very excited about it. We haven't seen each other
quite some time.
I don't even know. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time. A few months.
We still work right next door to each other.
In the same building.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what you do and how you came to work for this organization called Griswold Pride.
Sure. So I've been in the substance use prevention field for over 20 years, straight out of college, my first gig. And I've been with the same company the whole time. So Community Health Resources is my employer. And through them, we seek out funding for prevention efforts. Over the last 10 or so years, I've worked with four different coalitions in Eastern Connecticut. And my work in Putnam with the Putnam Pride Coalition. And let me just say, Pride stands for the Partnership to Reduce the Influence of Drugs for Everybody. And we are a drug-free community coalition. So we're federally funded by the CDC and the ONDCP, so Office of National Drug Control Policy. And we work together, we bring in 12 sectors of the community to work together to prevent youth substance use in our community and reduce adult substance misuse. So like I said, I started in Putnam probably about 10 years ago or so, and since then I've worked with Eastern Connecticut State University. They had a campus coalition and also the Wyndham Pride Coalition. So I've gotten a little bit of everything all over Eastern Connecticut. In about 2014, heroin use disorders, overdoses, they were just starting to be talked about. And we had done a lot of work in Putnam, and Griswold at the time had a young, very young adult die from an overdose. And the first selectman wasn't quiet about it. And he was probably one of the first politicians, local politicians, to take a stance and say, listen, we have a problem. So with that, I was working in Putnam, but I'm from Griswold. Here, my heart and soul from Griswold. So we reached out to the first selectman and said, this is what we're doing in Putnam, and let's help you. So we mentored the Griswold Pride Coalition to get started. So that's what brought me back to Griswold. And now I moved back to Griswold, and I work in Griswold, and I'm happy to be back. So goodness, to sum it up.
Okay, well, we'll move over to Kelly. We'll get back to you with some questions
sure.
in a second, though.
We're happy to have you back in Griswold.
Yes.
So you know.
Yeah. She does an amazing job.
Oh, I know, yeah.
And people love you. We're going to talk about a little incident last week.
Okay.
So Kelly, tell us about you and Matt's mission and what this means to you.
Absolutely. Also from Griswold, been there most of my life. Lost my brother in 2015 to a drug-related accident. And my mom started Matt's mission right after that. She took all that pain and put it into action. She was the president for a while. Now we've switched roles. I'm the president, she's the vice president, and we are a nonprofit organization that exists to end the stigma of substance use disorders, to advocate and raise awareness for it as a disease, and focus on treatment, not punishment. We want, eventually, people suffering from substance use disorders to be part of the healthcare system, not the criminal justice system. So we work closely with Griswold Pride. We do that. Our big event we just had, our Matt's Mission Celebrates Recovery. This was just this last Saturday. And we're just out in the community, kind of raising awareness and helping people out. And now we are needed more than ever, because it's just becoming so much more intense.
Especially after COVID, right?
Yeah.
Has it gotten worse? Do you notice?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. There was a 30% increase in drug-related deaths just since the pandemic alone.
Wow. Do you think a lot of that has to do with, you know, the isolation piece of it?
Yeah, there's a couple issues when it comes to that, or risk factors. So the isolation brought on the mental health, but they were using alone. And when you use alone, you don't have somebody there to call for help if you overdose. So a lot of times, when we see an overdose fatality, the majority of the time they were using alone. So that is a huge risk factor that we're trying to bring awareness to, because there are resources out there, so you don't have to use alone. Whether you use it with a buddy, or there's even apps for that nowadays. So
are they aware of it? Are you educating people?
We're just starting to get the word out. Mm-hmm. The apps are new, fairly new. So we're just starting to get the word out. But yes,
wow.
We do educate the community on that.
Well, because I think that part's important, because you know, as you see this pandemic waxes and wanes, so we don't know if we're going to get into another solitary event where everybody's homebound again, coming into the winter, and you know, plus we have the shorter days, and
sure.
There's that seasonal affect disorder that a lot of these people who have this disease are afflicted by, and some other underlying conditions. So if they don't have any resources to speak to somebody or people, you know, we could be going through the same thing again. And especially where we are, that's a huge concern, because some of those places are so remote.
Right.
And that's another part of the issue, is not, you know, just the simple thing of not being able to get to meetings or support groups, and having that, that's huge for people, you know, to be able to be together and talk and help one another out.
Right, not feel alone
in
their disease.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So Kelly, your mom, she was, I remember when she started this, she was such a strong advocate for it, and she gets so intense and just like there's so much passion
yeah,
with her.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and I think it's a good thing that she had an avenue to channel her pain,
because
sure. it could have been so horrible for her.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure it was on many levels, but this definitely did help. And I know you were living away at the time, right? And you just, when did you come back?
Oh gosh, well, I moved to New York, which was a little closer, you know, it was only ferry ride away. Geez, when did I do that? About 3-4 years ago, and now I'm all the way back to stay.
good.
For the record.
Good.
Goodness day. But yeah, you know, everybody grieves differently, you know, and her grief was to channel that. And I'm really glad that she did, and because we've been able to help a lot of people. And, you know, we've always said if we could save just one life through this whole process, just the one, and it's been, you know, we've reached a lot of people, but, you know, then it would all be worth it, just the end. We far surpassed that now, so.
Are you, do you have like a fundraising goal that you're looking at, and how do people donate money if you need it?
Yep, so you can donate on our website through PayPal, and we also take, you know, in-person donations at the event. We do different fundraisers, spaghetti dinners, comedy nights. We have all sorts of avenues. We're going to look into the grant thing soon, but that's a big world.
It's a full-time job.
Yeah.
It's a full-time job.
I've seen Miranda going through the grant process. Yeah. I walk into her office and there's stuff everywhere. And she's like, I just have to get this done.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And it's, right now, our board, it's all volunteers. Everything comes from volunteer. So, you know, people have other full-time jobs as well. So we're growing. We'll get there.
It seems like you have a good support system.
It's fantastic.
And people helping. And every time I go to your mom's had a few events, and I've gone, and you were at the last one.
Yeah.
At that that building. What's the building? The one on.
Yeah.
One on North Main, East Main Street, North Main Street.
I'm just drawing a blank.
Oh
here.
My goodness.
Oh, where your office is?
Yeah, the Paragon.
Yes.
Paragon. Yes. That's the one.
There was an event there.
Paragon. Yeah, our open house.
Yes, yeah. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because she had just started. She just put her office in.
Yeah.
There, so.
Yep.
I just want to give props to them. I mean, for a nonprofit to run fully and strictly on volunteers with no grant funding and to do so much is like amazing. It's just so amazing. I know how much work that is, you know, and I see what they do. And I tell them all the time, we partner in so many different activities.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, go home. Like, I'm getting paid for this. Like,
yeah, right.
I got this, okay?
Like, yeah.
Relax,
yeah.
You know? So it's just, they're such a huge asset to our community. Huge.
Really. And our board members are just compassionate, awesome people, you know, and yeah, it's been lovely to see how the community can come together when you ask.
And you're getting a lot of support from the community, correct?
We are, yeah.
Okay.
More support than not, for sure.
And how's the fire department? Have they been helping, both of you, right, are involved with that?
I'm part of this OD MAP committee. So this brings together first responders or public safety and public health. And this is run by the Uncas Health District. And we work with our first responders to educate them on opioid use disorders, overdose outreach, prevention. And they're very active. You know, they hand out resource cards for us after an overdose. They've handed out Narcan to individuals after an overdose or the family members of individuals after an overdose. So yeah, they're a huge asset to our community and to our cause, because they're not just saying, well, oh, there's another one. They are engaged in the prevention of overdoses in our community.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's it makes all the difference to have a team.
Well, they're the face of it.
Yeah.
Right? They're the ones that respond to these calls, and the families, they're the first ones the families see and deal with. And if they're not educated on it or compassionate or, you know, empathetic toward what's going on, then, you know, why would the families not going to respond?
And I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe they're all volunteers too at the fire department.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Yeah, most of Eastern Connecticut,
Everybody
volunteers. So tell us a little bit about what you collaborate on, like the events and the...
Yeah, so the town is eligible for mini grants through the statewide opioid response. And so I'll write the grants for the town, and then we go into collaboration with MAP's mission to implement our chosen activities and strategies. And most recently, we've done outreach through giving away reentry backpacks. So we are trying to reach the people being discharged from treatment or released from incarceration. And we want to help them establish themselves and reintegrate back into our community.
Mm-hmm.
So we're providing these backpacks filled with resources, obviously, but just even the daily needs that they, you know, masks, hand sanitizer, toiletries, socks, flip-flops, like, because most of the time they're released with just, you know, the items on their self. So we have been able to stuff them also with Narcan, so they have that available as well, because those first 2 weeks after release is the most risk for an overdose, because they might use, and they might use the original amount they were using, and now their body is not cannot tolerate that amount anymore. So it's a high risk of overdose for them. So that's our most recent one. And then a year ago, this one is really cool, and it shows the capacity of our community to really make changes. That we reached out to the businesses, and we did a Narcan on site project. So using the data that we've collected from the OD MAP committee with Uncas Health District, we can pinpoint hot spots of overdoses within our community, or locations, not exact locations, but the areas. Mm-hmm. And within those, we can provide outreach. And during COVID, we were not doing outreach. We were all, you know, locked up. So we put our efforts into outreaching to the businesses in the locations of the hotspots of the overdoses, asking them to have Narcan on site in case of an overdose within their area. They were provided toolkits, they were provided flyers to post for the public, and flyers for their employees, so the employees could recognize an overdose, mm-hmm. And then respond to it appropriately and use the Narcan if they felt comfortable. So that was a huge, huge, it was policy level change that makes a huge impact. Like, you're not just affecting, like, you know, 12 businesses. We're impacting the whole community with that. Mm-hmm. So we're really proud of that initiative.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty
cool. The tides are changing.
Yeah, they are. Are you getting a lot of pushback? Were people, you know, I mean, because obviously there's still a lot of people out there, I'm all tongue-tied, that don't understand that this is the disease.
Sure.
You know, and are very
negative
about it. I mean, it's hard. It's a hard thing to be positive about it, but, you know, you have to find the positive in it. Like,
right.
What you're doing, and, you mm-hmm. know, this potential for recovery, and, mm-hmm. you know, that's all positive. But
right.
people said, you know, why do you help them? Why mm-hmm. just let them go, let them die, let them kill mm-hmm. themselves? You know, there's always comments like that. Mm-hmm. I see it all the time, especially your mom shares some things in some of the communities, and some of the pushback. I read the comments, and I'm just like, are you a human being? Like, mm-hmm. these are people.
Sure.
They
sure.
don't care. So,
yeah.
I mean, how do you, she gets so mad because, you know, it's, you know, this is personal.
It is personal.
This
yeah.
is personal.
But I think, you know, no matter what we're talking about, there's always going to be opinions that aren't, they don't agree with ours. And we do it slowly over time. We educate one person, you know, and that person will educate maybe three more. And, you know, that spreads. I don't necessarily deal with the negative comments because I wouldn't handle it as well as my mom. She's just, she's graceful.
She's very graceful.
Yeah, she is. So I don't necessarily do that part. But, you know, we'll get there. It's all, everything takes time. It's all a process. Okay. I wish it would go faster. I wish everybody would just be in our boat and understand. But, you know, a book, it's called Chasing the Scream. The author just escaped me. But, worth a read for anybody out there that doesn't fully understand it. It really puts it in perspective. You know, even for me, when I read it that first time, I was like, wow. You know, it, even coming from where I was coming from, it still opened my eyes to a lot of things. It's pretty fascinating. So I recommend that to anybody looking to learn a little more, but we'll get there through education and time.
Yeah, and it's, you know I had a brother who was addicted to drugs, and two brothers, but you know, you become hard to it. You go through your cycles, right? You become hard
sure.
to it because they just push your buttons. They, you know, want things from you, and they steal, and they do all this stuff, and, you know, you become hard to it.
Mm-hmm.
And even after my brother passed, you know, I didn't feel angry with him. I was just, like, relieved. Mm-hmm. It was like a relief
sure.
because
yeah.
we didn't have to deal with this anymore after 45 years.
Deal with it, worry about it.
Right.
Yeah, that's why we've long said, you know, it is a family disease, a community
yes.
disease. It affects almost everyone.
Yes.
So just, I'm sure you know, and I haven't spoken about this publicly, but my family just suffered a loss due to an opioid overdose over the summer. And so this just goes to show I mm-hmm. am... You know, like, I am in this field. I am, you know, doing this work, and it can happen to anybody. And everything you just said are all the feelings that my uncle and my grandfather are going through. And for me, it was, I knew it was going to happen eventually if, you know, changes weren't made. And we provided, of course, we provided help and outreach and resources and everything. And I felt the anger, I felt the frustration, and then, you know, I just learned, like, you can't treat your family members. Like, I could go and see a client and have so much empathy and compassion and understanding for this complete stranger suffering from the same disease as my family member. But when it came to your family member and you've seen the hurt that this disease brought on the family, it's very frustrating. So yes, I understand. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, this the reason for what I do here is because we're trying to bring to light, I think I explained a little bit about this, was, you know, people that do amazing things in the world. And, you know, part of this process is we've had people who are recovered alcoholics come and speak, or drug addicts come and speak. And, you know, and it's not just your average, you know, they went into recovery and then they just get on with their life. They're doing, like, amazing things with what they've learned and how they've grown. You know, that's what we're trying to encourage here, is that part of it. Is that something that you do with these people that are going through recovery, is, you know, have them come up and speak at a meeting, or, you know, advocate for others that are going through this addiction kind of
thing? Yeah, absolutely. We have, at our yearly event, we have speakers, people in recovery, and we also do a monthly support group. It was virtual for a bit because, you know, pandemic, but we encourage anybody in their path of recovery to come and speak, and it helps. It offers hope. It shows that there is a path to get there, and it's very empowering to the people. You know, not everybody wants to do that, of course. That's not everybody's cup of tea, but for those that do, they are, I mean, they're some of the best speakers I've ever heard telling their story. And
And I think that it by doing that too, by empowering people with this and not judging them, it just makes them want to do more, as opposed to go back to using again, right?
Right.
It gives them something to look forward to and some hope.
Right.
And I find that, and the people that I just talked to, I mean, the stories are absolutely incredible. Most normal people couldn't live a day in their shoes.
Right.
They couldn't deal with it. And these people, you know, they get knocked down, they get back up, they get knocked down, they get back up. And it's just, I think it's inspiring.
Warriors are usually the term I use for them. They're just
And they were
warriors.
Chosen for this path. I believe they were truly chosen for this path because, you know, when they come out the other end, they're helping, you know. And even with this work that I do too, it's the same thing. I always say, you know, I could get up and speak to a room of 1,000 people. Do they all hear me? Not necessarily. But you're planting a seed, right? And if one person, if that seed grows in one person after that event or whatever it is, then you've accomplished something.
Right.
It's one more person that got affected than yesterday. And those other 999 people, that seed will just fester for a while, then it will grow, right? And so it's a slow, you're right, it's a slow process.
Right.
And I have to be honest, like this whole premise for this podcast, it's not something I've never even talked to you about it, because, you know, it wasn't something that was there. And in February, it was all, I was in a meditation and all this information was channeled, and I was like, what do you mean I have to do a podcast, and who's going to be on it? And you know, your friends, that's what they told me, my friends. Okay, so, you know, I've been calling on my friends to come on the show and talk about their experiences, and it could be, I have an astrologer, we have psychics, we have people that are doing wonderful things in the community. So if there's anybody that you know that you think that would be a good fit for this, please. Because we just want the world to, you know, we're at this precipice. This is us, the human race, right? We're at this precipice. And we could go either way. And our job as people that do what we do is to pull them back from that, right?
Yeah.
And let them see the good that's happening in the world.
Yeah.
Even though the stuff that you deal with starts out negatively, it ends up positively.
A lot of the times it does.
Right? Yep. And that's what people need to see. They need to see that end result. And that's the message. We need to jump over the negative stuff and just say, hey, this is the product of what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course, there's not everybody's going to agree, or right. You know, and that's to be expected. People think what I do is hogwash, or mm-hmm. you know, whatever. But you know, I can't tell you how many addicts come across my table and talk to me about what they do. Mm-hmm. And you know, have I been able to help them all? Probably not. But some of them, you know, I give them resources or whatever information. But a lot of it is, and I find this with the mental health industry, and you're probably running into some of this, is they address the alcoholism or the drug use. They don't address the issue that caused all of that from the beginning. Like, you know, this child was molested when he was 3 years old.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of what we're trying to like bring to light, is this is what you need to address as the core issue.
Yeah, a lot of times, oftentimes, you know, the substance use disorder is more of a self-medication for some kind of traumatic event.
Absolutely.
And most treatment programs now recognize that as a co-occurring disorder, and that is the future, and it's a present actually right now too. They do identify the trauma and work them through that trauma, so in the end, the behavior is just a substance use disorder.
Right. I agree with that, because mm-hmm. it's so important, because there's so much of it you don't realize. But you know, I can talk to one of my clients, and he'll come in and tell me what's going on, and just like through a half an hour conversation, I could be like, so what happened when you were 5? Tell me about your relationship with your father. And it's like, yeah, it goes right to that point,
yeah.
You know, because that's the information that comes out. So,
right. And are they ready to talk about that?
Sometimes they're not. Yeah. And then they come back and they talk about it, or, you know, we work it out. And most times they're like, I don't even remember that incident. Because they blocked it out.
Yeah.
They don't even remember it.
Yeah.
But it's a slow process, and sometimes it's not so slow. I mean, I've had some really bizarre things that have come up, and you can see how it's affected their life as adults.
Sure.
Right? Because,
sure.
Like, they're acting like 5-year-olds. They don't take accountability for their actions. It's always somebody else's fault. And they have trouble with relationships, and everybody's pushed away. And mm-hmm. even their family. Mm-hmm. They abuse their family because that's the only place they feel safe, so they can abuse the people that, you know. So all of this is part of that.
Sure.
It's all part of that.
Yeah, the recovery process certainly is multifaceted, and getting rid of that substance is just one part of it. There's healing that needs to be done, and working through trauma, and getting back into society as well. You know, society kind of pushes that population away sometimes, and getting back in isn't always easy. That's why even the backpack event, you know, like, it seems so small and simple, but I've had people say, like, you have no idea, just have socks. Mm-hmm. You know, it restores dignity, just those little things, you know, and it lets somebody know, we see you, we care, we're here. So it's a whole...
They don't have to ask for it either. They don't have to grovel or, you know, beg their family for any of that, because you're providing it all for them.
Mm-hmm.
So you are. You're kind of giving their humanity back to
right.
them, and,
right.
and facilitating the healing process.
Because
mm-hmm. that, you know, that's like the most important thing to them, is to feel human again and part of society.
And that's a big reason we have to get them out of the criminal justice system as well. You know, jails, they don't restore your humanity or your dignity. They rip it away. You know, and it's just not helpful. It's not helpful at all.
No.
So we'll get there.
So what do you see Griswold Pride going next?
Oh gosh, we are, speaking of the mental health and the substance use, we're slowly integrating more and more mental health awareness and wellness promotion activities. I work very closely with the schools on their social emotional learning collaborative. They've actually prioritized that as a district priority for all four schools for this year. And they have wonderful consultants that they brought in, and they've asked me to be a part of that team. It's like from the community approach. So, you know, we've done a lot of work at the high school with the SEL committee there, but now all three schools have the SEL committee. So I'm looking forward to getting into the middle school, the elementary school, you know, starting small, you know, bringing awareness to the protective factors that a healthy social emotional learning, you know, brings to just not just your education and the school climate, but you know, themselves as well. So Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. I think it goes hand in hand, you know, the mental health and the substance use like we just discussed. So that's our future right now is really, you know, not just talking like don't do drugs. We don't do that. You know, that didn't work, you know.
It didn't work.
That's not what we do as a coalition. We want to, you know, empower too, but on my watch. I'm like, is that me?
That was me. So do you plan on educating the parents as well?
Yeah, we have some parent messages as well. Most of that is all done through our social media right now, and then I'll utilize like the school parent emails and whatnot. But yeah, they get flyers. We just sent one out last week on there's apps for parents now. Like it's funny because we had a campaign in Putnam now that was like, there's no app for that. Like, talk to your kids about underage drinking. You got to be the ones to do it. And now, guess what? There's apps for that.
Yeah.
And it's called Talk They Hear You. So we're promoting that. And it's kind of just conversation starters on how to start the conversation with your kids on not even just substance use, any risky behavior. Mm-hmm. And then there's another one we're promoting. It came to our attention this summer that there's a lot of education needed on for the parents on how to monitor social media and cell phone use for their kids. So there's actually an app for that, Bark Technologies, you know? So here you go. These are the two resources, you know, there you go, right on your phone. So we're trying to get the word out about those, and hopefully we'll see what happens. Like, it just went out Friday, so.
Are you getting good feedback from the parents on the program in general, or?
Yeah, funny story. I was at Harkness Park yesterday, and I ran into a coalition member who's also a photographer on the side. She's taking pictures and she's like, oh my God. And she's talking to the family that she's photographing or photographing. And they're like, oh, she's like, this is Miranda. She's in charge of the Grizzle Pride. Oh my God. And so this stranger, you know, Harkness was like, I've never met her, but she knew all about us. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, it was really rewarding yesterday.
You've been working very hard at this. So.
Wow. It's lots of work to do.
Yeah, no, I know it's not going to end anytime soon, but.
Are you ready? Ready to grow and raise your vibration? Then buckle your spiritual seatbelt and hold on for the ride of a lifetime on Awakened Soul Stories with host, intuitive medium, and energy healer, Pam Padalano. Awakened Soul Stories is every Friday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. Pam's guests are all part of the divine plan to help heal the world and raise the vibration in order to become one with the universal consciousness. Pay close attention as we go on this spiritual journey together.
And what about you?
Future Matt's mission, I hope to continue growing, get some grants, like I said, help as many people as we can. But thinking bigger picture, what we do is amazing. I hope to maybe push towards changing legislation and things like that. Because we do, I mean, we can help individuals all day, and we will continue to do that. But in the end, we gotta go get to the root problem. Get to the root of that and fix it. Otherwise, we're doing what everybody else is doing and just, you know, little band-aids, which band-aids, we need them. You know, I'm not putting that down, but it's a bigger picture. Work on changing things as a whole.
Right. And it's going to take, you know, I know because you struggled to get into the political arena. I mean, you got your foot in the door now.
It passed this year.
So you're great. Yeah.
So after 3 years, backstory, okay, the state police, implemented a pilot program to connect people to resources through a licensed clinical social worker. It was a partnership with the State Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. So a social worker was embedded within Troop E, and Griswold was chosen as the pilot community. That was back in 2016, I believe. And during one of the political races for state rep, I believe, Brian Lanoux picked up on this, and he was proposing to expand this up to Troop D, because that was also part of the community that he represented. And after 3 years, this year, it was finally passed, which is huge. And it was picked up by the whole Republican caucus, not just, you know, Brian. So Republican caucus got behind it. and it will be up in Troop D. They have to iron out the logistics, and then they're creating a statewide task force to study the costs and benefits of the expansion. And I was actually designated to the committee, so I'm really excited for that. It hasn't started yet.
Great.
Yeah, it's huge for Gristle Pratt. You know, this is a state task force, and our little community is going to be represented on that. So
with your voice too, which is going to that's fantastic.
Yeah, this is really a huge passion of mine. When we were chosen in the pilot community, I had a lot of learning to do, but the state police paid for me to attend trainings with them. So we would go to these national trainings, and the first one we went to was the first of its kind in the whole country. And it's through PERI, which is the Police Assisted Addiction Recovery Initiative. And it was formed out of Gloucester, Mass. And they implemented the ANGEL program. So what they did, so there's all different models of these type of recovery initiatives with the police. But what they did was brought in, well, you could literally go into a police station and just say, I need help, and they would connect you to treatment. And it boomed. Like, they went, you know, nationwide. They put this out there, and people were flying, literally flying, from California to Massachusetts just to walk into a police station and get help.
Right.
I met the man, you know, telling the story. And so PERI has now become the national model for these types of initiatives. And I attended the very first conference with the state police and the statewide narcotics task force, and then we went again the following year. COVID hit, you know, we haven't done that anytime recently, but it was like eye-opening. It was one of the best conferences I've ever been to, and I learned so much. So yeah, I'm very grateful. Yeah, so this is like my passion. I really would love to see this go statewide, you know, the crisis program. So we'll see what happens.
Wow. And are you involved in any of that?
Not that, no. But I support the heck out of it, that's for sure.
Well, you were, though. You were very involved in the policy,
sure.
Like the advocacy.
Sure.
Advocating
that
for it.
Part. But, I mean, yeah. I remember when that in Massachusetts, when that came, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, it's really changing. Like,
yeah.
Just one place. But I mean, once that one place, it'll explode. It will. And
right.
We're seeing that now.
So are you, you want to be involved in the policy end of it? And how do you?
I mean, eventually, you know, like that's, we have so much we're doing right now, and we will have to grow a little bit, you know, but eventually, yeah, we have to work on making some of these big changes. Otherwise, we're just going to keep seeing the same things over and over and over again. So hopefully someday I'll be back here being like, guess what we did?
I'm excited. I told your mom to come when she's feeling
better.
I know she was a little under the weather. But yeah, that would be great. I would love to have you come back, because people need to keep hearing this. It's not something you can just talk about one time and say, they were on like 3 years ago. And,
because that problem's going to stay out there. It's going to stay, so we need to keep talking about it. Absolutely.
Either one of you noticed like the trending changing age group? Like, is it male, female? Like, what's...
Actually, funny you say that, female overdoses have increased a lot over the last few years. There's that. Other trends I'm not seeing. There's a lot of polysubstance use. So especially with fatal drug overdoses, it's not just, I mean, obviously fentanyl is what is, you know, killing people, but it's a lot being mixed with that. So we've seen xylazine is a new one, and this is actually a horse tranquilizer.
Isn't that a horse tranquilizer?
Yes, it's a horse tranquilizer, but it's being mixed, and that's caused some fatalities locally. Yeah.
It seems like we have a high density in Griswold.
We do. So, unfortunately, I don't know what the stats are this year, but if you look at the overdoses compared to our population and you do the rate, we did leave the state. This was like 2 or 3 years ago. We had to own, but we own that, you know? Like, it's again, it's why we were chosen as the pilot community for the crisis program. You know, we were leading the state in the state police Narcan uses. Our little town had a lot of Narcan administrations by the state police, so that's why we were chosen as a community. But that's only one reason. They also identified we have the capacity to get this program out into the community with our partnerships that we had. So it was, you know, it ended up being a really good thing. You know, we're doing something about it. We're owning it.
We're not just saying, oh, well, that's what happens there.
Right. Yeah. Owning it, talking about it, and talking about it and working on fixing it. I think all the time, imagine if we had Narcan in the community. It gives me the chills when I think about it, you know, like it's saving so many lives.
I heard you were questioned about why we save lives last week.
Yes, I was.
And what was your response? I heard your response and I laughed because I said, well, Maria is usually pretty like mellow, but
it got me a little fired up. But in the end, I think I made a difference with that individual because.
Yes, you did.
I did. I believe I did because by the end of the conversation, it was good. And I was like, that's what I'm here for. I'm here to educate you. So I was blunt and I was matter of fact, but I was, you know, if it was your child, your brother, your, like, your family member, it can happen to anybody, you know?
That's how we change minds, though. Yeah. One person at a time.
Yeah,
just one person at a time. It seems slow. One person at a time.
It's more than yesterday.
Yep.
That's what I say. It's like more than we had yesterday. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from the conversation I had with this individual, and he's going to kill me for saying that. I don't care, though.
I just made a difference. I know it made a difference because I got a phone call, and it was a really positive phone call this week. From him, so it was really good. Yeah,
but he thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think that's
great.
See,
I'm gonna give you the knuckles for that one. Because if you know Miranda, she's usually pretty, like, you know, you're pretty happy and mellow. So when I heard you got a little fired up, I was like, wow, I haven't seen that side of her. But I was, and inside I was cheering you on. I'm like, go, Miranda.
Sounds like it was very effective.
You need to do that more often. So you're working with the schools. Are you working with the schools as well?
No, we're kind of, I mean, we work with Grizzled Pride all the time, like you know, but we're kind of on the other side, working with people once they've already gone down the path of substance use. Yep.
So you catch them at the other end of it.
We do, yeah.
They're downstream, we're upstream. Yep. That's how we like to describe
exactly.
So it's like fishing in the natural river.
Yeah, we balance each other, you know? Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your brother.
Oh, Matthew. He was so funny. Such a big heart. Friends loved him. Like, I love getting together with his friends and hearing stories because they knew a person that I didn't know. You know, I was his sister. But he struggled, I think, for probably a few years before we even knew, you know, something like that was going on. He really struggled with the aspect of not being allowed back into society, kind of, you know, with a arrest record, finding a job was difficult. You can't find a job, you can't go to work every day and support yourself. It's, you know, this cycle, and we just couldn't get him to the other side of that, you know, no matter what we did, and boy, did we try. And I went through all the stages too, you know. I, years and years and years ago, I remember saying to him, if it hurt my parents that I wore socks, I would just never wear socks again, is what I thought it was that simple, like, hey, just don't do this anymore, see, it's hurting us, so just, you know, and I've come a long way since then, so I know, you know, the people that express dissent or, you know, don't agree with, I get it, I understand, it was a process for me as well, but yep, we lost him in November of 2015 after a lot of battles, you know, a long road, lots of phone calls, worrying nights, oh, it's just... It weighs heavy on you when you love them so much, you know. And but yeah, he now his face is all over Jewett City, and he's not gone. You know, we may not be able to see him physically anymore, but he's still here. And yeah, he was awesome
in making a huge difference.
Huge difference.
He has a it's funny because whenever I look at his picture, which again I've seen it. A lot.
Right.
It's just, there's a lot of, you can tell he was special, and there's a lot of light around him, and it emanates from his smile and his eyes, and you know, it's an amazing thing. And I can understand why, you know, the whole process for you and your mom and your dad was so painful, because he was special and he couldn't see that.
Right,
but everybody else could see it.
Yeah,
you know, that's the that's a very frustrating thing.
Yeah, you know, I've often thought the thought, if he could have only loved himself as much as we loved him, then
yeah, that's the core of it. They don't love themselves, because if they did, they wouldn't abuse their bodies. You know, and that's a tough thing, mm-hmm. but we all get there at some point. It's just when.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and yeah, it is frustrating. And you had a family member too, so if you want to talk about that person, just
it's a perfect example of mental health disorder compiled with a substance use disorder, and it was years, you know, same thing, incarceration and treatment and out and overdose and Narcan, and you know, it was just like she said, it's the same story. And this, you know, he overdosed twice this summer, and that I know of, that, you know, EMS responded to, and the last one, it was too late. So he suffered from bipolar as well, and he's self-medicated, I think, you know. And we're just starting to talk about this as a family. Not that anybody's ashamed, it was just, it's been a struggle, as you know, you know. So we there hasn't even been a service yet, you know. It's unfortunate that our medical examiner is backed up, and this is so sad. It's so sad. But from overdoses and COVID, you know, this is the effects.
That's tough. Exactly. You have to drag everything out.
Yeah.
And then it just takes longer. There's not a lot of closure that goes on with both kinds of deaths, COVID and you know, this is it's a scary time that we're in, you know. And I think, again, this is why what you two do is amazing to me, because I don't know that I would have that kind of stamina. I say that, but you know,
I feel like we hear that a lot, like, oh, you know, how do you still do what you do? I think about it as this, because, like, yes, overdoses are still climbing, and we're doing all these things, and doesn't it discourage you? No. I think about how many deaths there would be if we weren't doing all these things, and that's what keeps me going.
Yep.
Well, that's still an amazing thing, you know.
Absolutely.
I consider both of you awakened souls, because you get it on a different level than most people. You know, this isn't about religion or anything like that, but do you feel like a spiritual connection to this work?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Oh yeah, I'm gonna cry. Most definitely. It's definitely my passion.
Yeah,
I don't think that we could continue to do it if it wasn't, probably, you know. I think that's you gotta feel it to your bones, and you know,
you do. It has to be part of you.
Definitely,
because it's a special kind of work that you do, and not everybody has the stomach for it, or you know, the stamina to, you know, just keep at it. You're like a cat, right?
Yeah.
We're just gonna keep doing this. We're just gonna keep chasing the fish head.
I'll
catch that fish.
Do you work with a lot of like religious organizations, or?
Yeah, the church. The churches are represented on our coalition, and that's one of the 12 sectors identified that, you know, we need to reach out to. And huge asset. When, I think it was 2016, we had a 16-year-old girl from Griswold fatal overdose, and we came together as a community and held a candlelight vigil, because it was the youngest overdose victim in the state. And all of the churches in town came together, and all of the pastors, ministers, fathers, whatever the denomination calls for, they all worked together to provide this, you know, healing event for the community. So it was really,
that was a shock. Well, her death was very tragic.
It was tragic.
Beyond, like, the drug overdose tragic.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was a double whammy, I think.
But
I think that's when, you know, at that point, that's when everything really shifted into even both of you doing this work, and, you know, you amped it up Yeah. And it just got the word out, and people that weren't even from our area were had heard about it.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I've had people, I remember when I was in Putnam, and then they had that, they brought the people from Griswold, yeah, the kids, up, yeah, to the school.
Yeah.
To talk about this, because Jack, my son Jack was involved,
yeah,
in that.
Yeah. So part of our work is we have a youth coalition, and we work with the youth leaders, or we develop everyday youth into leaders in their schools. So that was a joint effort, and we brought in some amazing trainers, youth trainers, and we provided youth leadership training, and it was a joint effort with Putnam Pride and the Griswold kids, and it was something special to watch. I loved it. I would sit all day long and just watch, and it was really special.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, I appreciate what you do.
Thanks.
I do. It's been like an honor to know you and your family. Really, it has, and you too. Your mom is, wow.
She's a powerhouse.
She's like this tiny little thing.
I know.
But she doesn't take no for an answer.
I've known that for many years.
Let me tell you, when we do our outreach, when we're outreaching to the businesses and stuff, I just would stand behind her and let her do her thing,
yeah,
you know?
Well, I made a mistake. I didn't make a mistake. She wanted an update on the Facebook event, so she's going to probably not be happy that I'm telling the story, but it was so funny. Because I know Kathy, so I know she's like, you know, a bit OCD in her tactics. And it was like, I don't know, 7:00, 6:45 on Sunday morning, and she said, well, I see that it's not changed, so I'm going to just put it on the thing. And I'm like, I'll be home in a half an hour. I will take care. I called her up on the phone to talk to her. It was like not even 7:00 yet on the Sunday morning.
Yeah, she definitely so gets things done. Oh my God. That is for sure.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's so amazing.
Yeah.
I'm so glad for her, though.
Yeah.
So we have 4 minutes left or so. So tell us how to get in touch with you, how people can contact you.
Sure. So our first things first, our website, grizzlepride.org. We have a very active Facebook page, so it's Grizzle Pride Facebook page. And then my phone number is 860-841-3803. And my email is mmahoney@chrhealth.org.
And any needs that you have?
Please get involved. You know, if you want to learn more, and you don't have to attend every meeting, there's so many different ways to get involved. So just contact us, reach out through any of those I just listed. Okay. And yeah, come learn about what we do.
Great, that's great. And Kelly?
Yes, we also have a Facebook page. I know a lot of people are on Facebook, so you can get us there. Mattsmission.net as well. We, with Grizzle Pride, we made a great virtual resource library, so there's a bunch of videos and stuff. You know, we always take donations if you want to get involved that way, but there's so many other ways. Even just by going through and reading through our website and clicking on some of those virtual resource videos, and educating yourself and others, that is getting involved. That's huge. So I encourage people to do that, and yeah, just learn more about us and what we do, and talk to other people about us as well. Yeah.
Because you've touched a lot of lives.
And we're gonna keep touching them, yep.
So do you have either one of you have events coming up that people can
participate? We'll be back at the Drug Take Back Day. So we're collecting medications for safe disposal, cleaning out your medicine cabinet, and that is coming up on October 23rd. It's a national event with the DEA. So that is our next big event. And that same week will be Red Ribbon Week, which is like a community-wide drug-free celebration. So
where do they, where's the event being held?
The Griswold Town Hall. Drug Take Back Day, Griswold Town Hall. Griswold Middle School does a phenomenal job with the Red Ribbon Week, so we'll be promoting that with them.
Yes, yes.
And Drug Take Back, for those of you guys don't know, it's super easy. Like, you don't have to get out of your car. Just drive through, give us your stuff, and we'll get it to safe disposal. It's, well, how many pounds was, like, almost 900 pounds last time?
Well, we collected anywhere from, like, 150 to up to even almost 300 at one time, but total, since we started doing it, we're at almost 2,000 pounds. We're just shy. We'll hit 2,000 this time.
That's a ton.
Yeah, a prescription medication
for safe disposal. Yeah, people are really getting the hang of this now. They know and they look forward to the event. So.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah. It's better than throwing it down the toilet. Right?
Yes, don't flush.
Right, yeah, don't flush. Don't do that, yeah.
Do you have a don't flush campaign?
They get some resources for them to leave with, yes.
Yeah. Oh, don't flush campaign.
Well, we have probably about 45 seconds left, so I just want to thank both of you.
Thank
Miranda
you.
Mahoney of Griswold Pride and Kelly Barrett of Matt's Mission. They do wonderful work in our communities. Look up their websites, look up their Facebook pages, get involved. We need your help. They need your help. And I can't tell you how happy I am that you came, and I hope you'll come back, both of you.
I'd love to.
This was fun.
No, thank you for bringing light to this.
Yes, I think it will. Yeah, it affects all of us, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So,
yep.
And everybody out there. So, thank you everyone for joining us tonight. Any closing words?
No, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. We'll do this again.
All right, perfect.
You're clear.
Thank you.
Warning before it does that. It's awesome.
It's like, yeah, so jumpy.
Great.
Wow. Was that really an hour?
I know.
I thought it was a half.
No, it was an
hour. That went so quick.
Yeah, it always does.
Oh, wait, my God.
She said it always does.
You've been listening to Awakened Soul Stories on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network with host Pam Padalano, airing every Friday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Thank you for tuning in, and our hope is that we've awakened a fire in your soul and inspired you to tell your story and to make a difference. Call 401-533-1864 or email Pam at thetreeoflife222@gmail.com for more information on being a guest. Check out our archived episodes and like us on Facebook and Instagram at Awakened Soul Stories. We look forward to hearing from you and connecting with you on this spiritual journey.